For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fuel, keeping the fire burning on the world's longest running radio show about the beautiful game at grassroots level. Joined again this evening by stalwart of the show and Non-League World's former manager at Hendon, Harrow Borough, AFC Wimbledon and many, many more, Mr. Dave Anderson. Good evening, Dave.
Hey, Emil. How are you?
I'm good. A little bit chilly in the studio this evening. So, but just thee and I today. Swampy's all lurgied up, so he's probably more wrapped up than I am at the moment. Hot toddy, hot water bottle, obviously now. But I mean, do you get to hold off these flu type things? You're a big strong man, aren't you?
I really don't want to tamp fate because my whole house has had some sort of virus or bug or cold, except me. There you go, kiss of death. Mm. So I would say this, but believe me, I'm a girl when it comes to that stuff. My wife laughs at me. I just can't suffer, but I'm awful at it, you know. But
you spent most of your life standing in wet, damp dugouts, haven't you? And sort of like extra layers on. Do you not get immune from those sort of things?
Yeah, I think you don't realise how wet and cold it is when your blood's boiling about referees and your own team's defending. So, but no, it's a fair comment. Over the years, I think because I've always sort of been outside, I think people who work in offices and stuff have a higher percentage rate of sort of picking up this nonsense. But we'll leave that for the non-league doctor show.
I think we're going to go on about, you know, in the modern world, it's all too clean and sterile. You know, when you used to be eating mud because that was the only meal of the day. Let's move on. It's been a sad week for fans of non-league this week. Two notable deaths of non-league legends who you and I have probably come across countless times in years being involved in non-league to the west of London. First, the news that rocked the whole of football in this country, the passing of Cyril Regis, once of Hayes FC, at the age of 59 from a suspected heart attack. A very unassuming guy. He achieved so much on the football field, but also a massive impact in the world of football. And the reaction to his death, you know, particularly via Twitter, social media, and that sort of thing, just showed how much he was loved and appreciated, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I didn't have the pleasure of meeting Cyril. Obviously, your club, he is. You know, it's only around the corner from me. And always brilliant when someone locally goes on and achieves the sort of fame that he did playing at the very highest level. I'm always, not amazed, that's the wrong word. I was moved by how people were when they were attempting to discuss how they felt about him. You know, big, strong man, you know, in tears, you know, just trying to describe what he'd meant to them. And you don't need to meet the guy to understand what he must have been like when you see, you know, top players and people who played the game when it was a lot more physical and a lot more sort of hard man image, you know. So you see them talking and they're struggling to keep their emotions intact. But a huge loss, obviously, you know, the racism stuff that thankfully the game's moved on in leaps and bounds. You know, he was brilliant in the early days of that, how he dealt with it, him and players of his ilk, you know. So, yeah, big loss. But then I think it's lovely the way it's people have received it and their genuine show of emotion, Tim, you know.
Yeah, and it was, you know, from the top down of football all the way down to people at non-league. If everybody that I've read on a message board that claims that saw Cyril play in that one seat of Vahey's, no wonder our attendances are lower than they used to be, because almost every non-league fan appears to have been and seen Cyril play his non-league games. But another death this weekend, or this week, and no less significant, is the news that Super Kev, Kevin McGoldrick, the physiotherapist at Slough Town for 32 years, lost his battle with cancer and also passed away. And I know that's someone that you did know, Dave.
Yes, I did. How can you describe Kev? You know, it sounds silly. You know, I was thinking about it today and yesterday, obviously, when I heard the news. If I could write down someone who was a nicer man and put him above Kev, you know, if I was going to list my 1 to 5 nicest men I've ever met in football, I still haven't come up with someone I'd put above Kev, and I've met loads of lovely guys, but he was just such a nice guy. So he had such a warmth about him. And again, on social media, Tim, you'll have seen an outpouring of people who have sort of known Kev through Slough. I spent a season or so there with Steve Bateman as his assistant, and he's just a top man, and that's one side of him, just to be such a nice, approachable, warm guy. But the other side of him, which shouldn't be forgotten, is his dedication to his work and how good he was at it. As a physio, he was top notch. He knew his stuff. He worked hard. He would come in on nights of his own accord if he thought it would mean the player getting fitter quicker. And to the point, I always remember there was once Steve Bateman was away on business and couldn't take the game because of his business, and so I was put in charge of the side, and I was experienced enough then. I'd sort of been around the block, so it wasn't a big deal. But he said to me, Batesy said to me, "You can expect Kev's call on Friday around about 7. I went, what's that for? He went, "Oh, Dave, listen, he will give you a rundown on every player in the team, every injured player, how they are, how they're feeling, when they're due to be ready, who we can maybe have a fitness to. He will run through the lot for you." I says, "Really?" And I'd been at a few clubs by this stage. I'd never really had this. And sure enough, on the button, 7 o'clock, phone rings. It was Kev. "Okay, Dave, here's the situation for tomorrow." Went right through the squad, where we are, what we are. "I'm in early with him. I don't think you'll get him." Just an absolute, the dedication of Mom was incredible. So, yes, a big loss. But Kev's one of them ones that I smile when I think about him. He just had a real persona of warmth, and you know, he could even chill me out, and you know what I'm like around a football ground, and just an awful loss to his family and indeed Slough, who were virtually his family. He was there for 32 years. I did, in fact, I don't know where you were in, but his daughter actually came in once when we were at BBC London. She was thinking about going into the media and was working on radio at that time. And Kev had asked me if she could come in on a show. I'm sure it was BBC London. And she came in and he was ever so typical, "Oh, Dave, thanks." And I went, "Ah, it's no sweat." But a lovely, lovely man. And as I say, my heart goes out to what his family must be feeling.
Well, I think, as you say, yeah, I mean, the fact that the guy's at the same club for 32 years, I mean, even most volunteers struggle for 32 years, don't they? But, you know, he's doing a job where, you know, I've seen managers, you know, fall out with physios and that over the years, and normally a new manager comes in, a new physio comes in. But clearly, he was so good at his job and such a nice guy that everybody just kept with him. And he was the best that there was.
Yes, and he'd seen Slough in the conference, Reim and Premier, Division 1 South, play at Beaconsfield, go through real hard times, and thankfully seen them into their new ground. And I always remember as well, I think it might have been when I was at Harrow and there was another change of management at Slough. And I rang him. I says, "Look, you know, what's happening? If there's any doubts about the new people at all, Kev, and you want a job, ring me, you know, please speak to me." Because I'd have taken him in a heartbeat, as I'm sure anybody at work with him would have. But sure enough, the next guy came into Slough, and it was the easiest decision you ever have as a football manager, was to keep Kev on, you know. But I did try and sort of drag him away, but he had a great love, it's one of them sad days. I always try and reflect on the happiness that the man brought to me and millions of other people, and the smiles that people have when they think about him at Slough, but no less sort of heartbreaking for his family, Slough, and to be fair, ex-players and managers, you know, that have met him. I think as well, Tim, if we can finish on this, I think that the people at Slay have set up like a trust fund on one of these sort of sites that you can sort of donate some money to his family's sort of benefit. I haven't got the name of the site, but if you go on Twitter and sort of go through Slay on Twitter, I'm sure you could find it if you felt that way inclined.
Well, see if we can give out the details of that at the end of the show if people want to donate. But yeah, a sad loss to the non-league world, their families and friends and everybody that they've touched, Cyril Regis and Kevin McGoldrick losing their battles with life this week. Now, we made mention last week of the plight of Hartlepool United. Various reports of them needing £200,000 by the end of the month to pay wages and bills, and even then not certain of avoiding administration. Now, despite various fundraising events, campaigns, retweets, etc., the club again surprisingly told us this week there is nobody available at the club to give interviews to explain what the position is or where this is all heading. So we've turned to our eyes and ears in the North East. Old friend of the show and journalist Mark Carruthers joins us on the line. Good evening, Mark.
Good evening. When you say old, I hope you don't mean my age. But,
well, no, we're much older than you, Mark. I forget you're a young gun. You've got many, many years on us. Lots of experience, but not the grey hair or the lines. So Hartlepool United falls upon your patch, and the club won't talk to us. But what about you and your sources? Is it as bad as we fear it might be up there?
Yeah, I think it's hitting, well, it's already hit crisis point, I think. You know, the fact it is right that they need 200,000 by the end of the month to pay various bills and wages, as you said there. But, you know, that will only sort out this month. Obviously, once February, you've got the same bills coming again. But I think what it will do, if they can get this 200,000, and I firmly believe they will do, they will be able to buy themselves a bit more time to find someone who's willing to come in with investment to get the supporters trust on board as well, because there's been talks between the supporters trust and obviously Jeff Stelling, who I think we can comfortably say is the most famous Hartlepool fan around. So it will buy them time, and it will buy them a bit of leverage to bring someone in who will be a bit more long term than simply, you know, just paying month by month. They will have someone who can take the club in the right direction. It's a great club, and you know, I've seen behind the scenes there. You know, the local press who work with the club, and it's just a fantastic setup, and it's such a shame to see that it has gone this way.
And do we know how it's all come about? Because obviously they would have got a parachute payment following relegation. Is it just that they've carried contracts, or you know, that they hadn't predicted how, you know, maybe income would go down this season?
I think it's just an accumulation of poor decisions. The previous owner of the club didn't really manage it in the way that is befitting of such a good club. You know, it's I keep stating that it's a great club. Hartlepool United, you don't have people in Hartlepool who support, say, Middlesbrough, Sunderland or Newcastle. It is a town where the club is very much at its heart, you know. And I think that's been shown this weekend, that the host Wrexham on Saturday, and they've got a near sellout crowd. I think it's actually just been confirmed it is sold out. That's going to be, you know, 7,000, well, over 7,000 supporters going through the gates, because they don't want their club to go under. They want to do what they can to support it. And I think everyone accepts that there have been poor decisions. There's been, you know, wrong financial moves made by the previous owner, and the new ownership, you know, the people who've gone in there to try and stabilise things have done everything they can. Now it needs a fresh outlook. Now it needs someone to really take control and sort things out and move the club on, because it deserves to be in a far better situation than what it is now.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, the fans are rallying around, you know, ex-players are donating things. I know there was a Legends evening. You know, these things normally take time, but they've been arranged in sort of a matter of days, and then again, sell out events. So it proves that, you know, there's plenty of support around there and people willing to help, but it just needs, a bit of organisation at the top.
It does, yeah, and I think I'm trying to put on a positive slant here. I think it will happen. I think the club will survive this and will go again. Whether we're in the current state that it's in now, I'm not too sure. You know, I hope, genuinely hope, they don't have to go to a part-time model, but you can't rule out that not being discussed. It's never been mentioned to me. I'm just merely speculating here. But Hartlepool United deserves to have a full-time football club. It deserves to have a Football League club, if I'm totally honest. And I think that the reaction that you've seen, there's a lot of affection for Hartlepool United. It's been mentioned on a show that I've been hosting tonight, the North East Football Podcast, that there is everyone has a good story to say about Hartlepool. And you look at people like Jeff Stelling, you know, there's a positive image that he gives out about the club. You have the fact that they launched the career of Brian Clough as a manager. You know, there's so many positive things about Hartlepool United, and that's why people are rallying around. You just think that the players that have been through the club and gone on to greater things, and then now trying to repay that debt. Another great club we have in the North East, Middlesbrough, were close to going under in the 80s, and it was Hartlepool who pulled them out, because they let them play games at Victoria Park. And you know, Middlesbrough fans haven't forgot that. There's a lovely thing going on where they've been donating to the fundraising page, and they've been donating £19.86 each, because you know that was when this all came to a head when Middlesbrough close to going under. So it's quite heartwarming to see not just the North East football family, but the nation trying to rally behind a club that deserves a lot better than what it's getting.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the money that they need to pay out between now and the end of the season, realistically, are they going to have to cut back the squad? You mentioned about going part time potentially, whether that will be this season or next season, if it even happens at all. But is there a chance that some of the players will have to be released, and there'll be a reduced squad for the rest of the season?
Again, I wouldn't really like to speculate on that, but you would think if players are on big contracts, it's going to be hard to get them off it. Unless bids come in. I know there's a few players being linked with moves away, which again you hope the squad stays together, because they do genuinely seem to care about what's going on at the club. Again, with the part-time thing, that was just not based on anything. It was just it could come to that situation where they have to do that. But as I say, I think the fact that everyone is rallying around Hartlepool United will ensure that hopefully the squad stays together. Craig Harrison's done it, despite the fact that they're not in the best league position, but he is doing what he can with the resources that he's got. You can't ignore the fact that the players will have their heads turned by what's going on off the pitch. But let's hope it's a positive outcome. And I think this week's been, there has been meetings between the supporters' trust and between various parties. I know Jeff Stelling said that he's met with a consortium as well, or certainly someone willing to invest. So hopefully positive moves will come over the next week, because, as I keep saying, they deserve a lot more than what they've got now.
Yeah, so off the field, so obviously going to have some sort of impact on that dressing room. And they are only 17th in the National League, just 7 away from the relegation zone. What would that mean to a club like Hartlepool? Relegation out of the National League as well in the first season, if that were to come about.
Well, I think there's two ways of looking at that. Obviously, it would be devastating to go down. I still think they will get crowds of roughly what they're getting now, because I think the supporters, again, will realise that it's happened because of kind of off-field circumstances, and they are fighting to keep the club alive. But then I think you look at it the other way, where the National League North now isn't necessarily, it's not a fully semi-professional league. You've got full-time clubs in there, so it is doable if you've got the right backing, if you've got the right support to stay full-time in that league. So maybe the impact isn't as much as it would have been, say, 10 years ago. But obviously they'd much rather stay in the National League, where it is just one promotion away from getting back in the Football League. And I know that's kind of, it may almost be pie in the sky at the moment, I guess, to talk about promotion, because of the clearly far more serious and pressing matters. But the club's long-term aim will be to get back in there. And I just hope they can kind of build on the little bits of positivity that are coming out from support that's coming from around the football family now, and really start challenging once again at some point.
So any idea of timescales? You mentioned the end of the month. Is there sort of any noises about these potential consortiums? Are they going to sort of appear next month and then maybe put some bids in, or is it just sort of we're just going to have to suck it and see?
Yeah, I think it's very much the latter. It's a case of some investors have it's been rumoured that they've said they will come in at the end of the season and try and sort of fresh start with the new season. But I kind of feel like it has to be done before that, whether it's supporters' trust trying to help the club get through at the end of the season. But I know there's talk about they couldn't really hand money over to the club because of the way the constitution's formed. I read that in one of the local papers the other day. So it's going to be very much a, you know, take it on a day-by-day basis, see what needs done, and then, you know, it'll be the same again the next day. And that is the worrying thing. If they need this 200,000 to pay the bills this month, they're going to need that again next season. So hopefully something will come together.
Well, yeah, moving away, while we got you on, we keep finding ourselves referring to the hotbed of football in the northeast, and it seems to be busy at all levels. But another big footballing move this week as well. I know we were discussing on Twitter earlier. Luke Hannant leaving Gateshead, going to Port Vale now. How did Gateshead replace someone like him? I mean, they're just a point behind Hartlepool, where even nearer the drop zone. Is that the sort of player you can replace at this stage of the season?
I'd say if you're going to do that, there's going to be a cost involved, because the sort of player Luke was, he was key. Gateshead, he was a hard-working, energetic player. You know, he can create chances left, right and centre, and I'm delighted for him because it's only 2 years since he was playing in the Northern League with Team Northumbria, and to go to Gateshead, where, let's be honest, he took a risk and going full time, and he's really got rewarded for that with a move in the Football League and going with a manager who he knows very well. Yes, Gateshead will have to replace him. They are in talks with Newcastle United to bring in a striker on loan, a young striker, which I'm expecting to go out probably by the time the show goes out, it'll probably be completed. But that's not a replacement for Luke Hannant, and they will need to do that. Whether they look locally, I know Steve Watson's been watching a lot of games locally, the likes of Blyth Spartans, the likes of, he's been in the Northern League as well, watching games there. So he will need replacing. Where it comes from, I don't know. But it does show that there's talent up here as well.
Well, and talent at non-league level as well. And it's nice to hear that Steve Watson's sort of dropping down level and at least watching the games. Whether he's going to pluck a player from there, it's nice to know that the non-league's looking after its own as well, and just keeping an eye on the game, and you know, hopefully giving a leg up to some of these players again in the future.
Well, what I think as well is the fact of, if you look at Gateshead, since they went full-time, and this is not a slight on anyone who's been at Gateshead, they haven't been local lads. You know, they've taken players from around the country, and I think what you've found in the past with Gateshead, if you look at the team that got to the playoff final 4 years ago now, it was made up of a local core, the likes of James Curtis, Phil Turnbull. You know, these were players who knew the area, who knew the kind of fan base very well. And I think that's what they've been missing over the last couple of years, is just a kind of local core. I think every club in non-league needs it. You know, players who know what to expect and know what the fans expect, and Gateshead haven't had that. So maybe Steve can take it back towards that. It will mean taking risks. You know, it will mean taking players from the Northern League, from clubs further down the pyramid, and giving them a chance. But I certainly believe, and I watch a lot of Northern League football, and I watch a lot of North East non-league football, the talent is there. It's just giving them a chance at the top level.
Well, we'll look forward to speaking to you again then as the season wears on, and you can spot some and give us some tips for the future as to who might be the shining light in the coming seasons up in the North East. But it's always good to talk to you, Mark. Appreciate your time, and thanks for your insight into the Hartlepool situation.
Thanks for having me.
With January well advanced, league positions are beginning to shape up, and clubs looking to make that second half of the season push are shaping up their squads. Top of the National North and 8 points clear, you may have thought Salford City might have a pretty well-shaped squad already. But another big signing this week means a perfect opportunity to chat with Salford City joint manager Anthony Johnson to tell us how it's all shaping up. Good evening, Anthony.
Hi, fellas. You okay?
Well, I'm good. Now, I say 8 points clear as we speak, but the clubs below do have a game in hand. And the other side of Christmas, you had a bit of a blip, didn't you? And things weren't looking as good. But you're looking, you know, pretty steady now.
Yeah, I mean, it happens very quickly in football. Just after Christmas, around Christmas, we went without a win, coming off the back of 7 wins. And then all of a sudden, 2 draws and 2 wins makes us 4 unbeaten. So it's funny how quick it can change.
And actually, you're over halfway now as well. I think 26 played out of 42. Are you sort of where you expected to be at this time of the season?
We hoped, coming into the new year, we'd be around the top 2 or 3. I think there's no secret to the ambition of what we were, you know, wanting to do at the beginning of the season, especially after missing out the way we did last year, last season. So coming into the new year, just to be amongst the top two or three, we thought, turning full time and coming into the sort of back end of the season, we'd get stronger. So thought to be, you know, as you said, they've got a game in hand, but to be 8 points clear with 16 points to go, is if someone had offered us that at the beginning of the season, we'd have snatched their hands off, because it's a terrific gap between us and Harrogate. But, you know, this time last week, if they'd have won their game on Tuesday night against Nuneaton and we'd have lost against Arlo, they'd have been a point above us. So that's why I say, you know, in football, things can change very quickly.
Dave Ennington, I think you've got some questions.
Yeah, I have. I'm interested in a few things. It feels, it's funny, it's one of them situations where I feel like I know you've watched the TV series, which is excellent. You know, it's really good. I'm not sure either that camera's in my dressing room, but it's great TV viewing. The couple of points for me, that I suppose the obvious one, Anthony, would be, you know, as a manager myself, I watch the two of you work as joint managers, and if someone asked me about it, I'd always say, "Bah, it can't work. It can't possibly work. So it causes confusion amongst the lads." But, you know, on our TV screens every week, we've watched the two of you make it work. What's the balance, sir? Just tell me how you go about that.
Well, the irony of it being is that when just before we took the job, we were still playing at Clitheroe, and we were playing under joint managers, and it didn't work. It just didn't work. There was almost conflicting interests and things like that from the pair of them, and it just didn't work. So I think for when we started, I mean, it's 9 years ago now, when we started, we was given an opportunity at Ramsbottom United where, you know, he just sacked the manager. We were still both in our prime as players. He just said, "You both fancy it." We didn't really think about it being a joint manager type of thing. We thought, you know, one might be a manager, one might take the reins as number two, but it just didn't transpire like that. We just end up being called co-managing. It's happened the same all the way through. But I think it's massively important to know that off the pitch, me and Bernard are best friends. We've known each other,
yeah,
known each other since we were kids. Our wives are friends. Our daughters were born within a couple of weeks of each other, which in itself is a bit bizarre. But we're very close off the pitch. So it's not something where I've seen in the past, you know, where lads have been thrown together and said, "Right, let's have a go at this joint manager thing." I think, you know, there's very select few people who've been a success at it. And I think it comes down to the fact that we're so close off the pitch. We have the same ideas about football. Now, don't get me wrong, we disagree on certain things. It would never happen in front of the lads in the changing room, but we'll sit down, you know, leading up to games and sessions and when we're planning things out and iron one or two things out.
Sorry to interrupt you, John. And this is the bit that I'm really intrigued by, because I think you do have to see it the same way, absolutely, if you're going to be joint managers. But when you have an inkling that you want to play Tim up front and he wants to play Dave up front or whoever it may be, yeah, who has that final say? Do you toss a coin? Is it? How's them decisions made?
Do you know what? Honestly, and it's going to sound an obvious statement to make. Any signings we've ever made, you know, throughout the time that we've been doing it, whether it be at Salford or Ramy in the past, has been carefully selected players that we know that fit the profile of player that we wanted in our team. So whether it be we had two centre forwards and playing one up top, but we had two to pick from, we know what both players could give. So if there was conflicting interest in the sense of he would say, "Well, I want to play this player and I think this player," it'd just be a case of looking at the opposition who would be better suited, and it's pretty simple. You know, it wouldn't be a case of, "Well, if you go in that way and I'm going that way, obviously, you know, there's something wrong." It doesn't work like that. Every player that we've ever signed, we've both agreed on to bring in, always been sort of a similar standard of play, whether it be two in a position or whatever. And it is quite simplistic, to be honest with you. And do you know what? At times, Bernard might take charge. Bernard might say, "Listen, I'm really convinced by this." And I'll just go, "Yeah, no problem. That's fine." And the other way around as well, I might be absolutely passionate with the decision I want to make. And we just go with it. But I think, I honestly believe, and I don't believe that would work if people were as close as we are off the pitch, if you understand.
Yeah.
That. You've got to have a strong belief in what we're doing.
Yeah, and I think more so, Anthony, because if that isn't the case, it becomes cloudy in the dressing room with the guys,
absolutely.
You know, and to be fair, we're fortunate because we get to see your dressing room, and I'll talk about that in a little bit, but the other question I'm intrigued to do, because I never got to had 30 years non-league football part-time. I never got to go full-time, and that sort of transition from part-time to full-time, which is massive, really. And I suppose, did the owners help you along the lines of structure and training, or where did you get that information from? I know we could all go and do it, you know, but did you do it yourself? Did you take advice off the owners? Where did that structure of, okay, we're full-time now, here's how we're going to set our week up?
Well, we became, it's a belted question, we became full-time in March last year, so actually the club was still part-time for the remaining couple of months of the season. So it gave us opportunity to be able to go into clubs, sit down with people, discuss how they did things, and you probably get a dozen, you know, 20 ideas off different people and how their week would look on a full-time environment. Because you're spot on, apart from, you know, when we were younger at clubs in our teens, which is nearly 20 years ago, we've never been in a full-time environment. But we had a coach who was bringing in, who's coming with us, Derek Egan, who has been around that. We've got Chris Casper, the sporting director, that we bounced ideas off. And to be honest with you, honestly, the owners have never, ever once got involved in anything. I know for a fact if we picked up the phone and asked for a bit of advice, they'd give it us. But it's never happened. We've never felt the need to sort of badger them for information or little bits of guidance, because we feel like it's our decisions ultimately. We want to be able to die on our own sword in that. But in the sense of the transition from going part-time to full-time, it was massively important for me and Bernard to be going into different places each week and seeing how they did it. I mean, we even went down to watch Eddie Jones in the England Rugby Union to see how, you know, the way that they do certain things. And it was an amazing experience. And it's going down there being open-minded about different ideas and stuff, you know?
Yeah, no, I think it's the one... It's the one intriguing question. And I've asked a couple of people, you know, I know Danny Cowley well at Lincoln. I've spoke to Terry Brown when he took over from AFC Wimbledon. And I'm always intrigued in that because it's the big one. The last one for me is reverts to the TV show and management. And, you know, we've watched you in the dressing room fly into players. Don't get me wrong. There's days when Adam made you look like Mother Teresa. So I'm not saying that I haven't got that in me as well to come in and rip into people. I think it's a part of management as where and when and what you do. But my let me get the question. I'm trying to get the question so I word it right to you. When I was at Wimbledon, someone videoed me when I was in the dugout, and my body language, my behaviour, you know, I was a bit sort of Kevin Keegan more than Arsene Wenger, if you know what I mean. And I looked at it and went, I'm not really happy about that. You know, and I watch you on the TV, the two of you in your dressing room on the TV. And to be fair, your success, is unquestionable. You've been successful with it. But do you watch back and go, I'm not sure I want that on TV?
Absolutely. I watch it from behind the couch at times, cringing. and that's genuine. And do you know what?
I understand that.
But it's the first time someone's actually asked a question in an interview where you can try and sort of explain how what you see, how it works. Now, they've done three series, and in them three series, we've won a promotion, two promotions, and the third one, we got beat in the playoffs on penalties. Now, over them three seasons, I think we've probably lost, give or take a game, maybe 25 games over three seasons. And every single time we've lost, and say it was from... stupid mistakes or what I perceive being a lack of effort, and I've gone in there and I've given them a bit of a roasting. They filmed it. It makes great TV. So from that first documentary, they've watched the previous manager was quite chilled out and mellow. So us coming in, basically saying we ain't going to win promotion. We're too far behind. And winning it, and they've sort of bolted onto that. They've gone, do you know what? It makes decent TV. This people are going to have an opinion on them too as people. They don't film us sat down planning training sessions. They don't sit and follow us every night out watching games. Because it doesn't
I know, to be fair, that's why I wanted to ask you, Andy, because I know you do that. I know there's more to it than giving someone a bollocking in a rollicking in the dressing room. But I do think they're essential at the time. But I was more interested in, because when you come into a dressing room after a game like that, you could have a whole film crew in there and you don't care. I know what it's like. You can't wait to get in the door to get into them and sort of make your points about where they've let themselves down. So I understand that it's a natural reaction, but But what I'm saying is it's the after one, you know, and you've answered it brilliantly by saying you hide behind the settee, because I get that, but I also get, and people should get, that there's 24 hours in every day that the two of you will be working your backsides off, doing yeah. other stuff to make, you don't get successful out of five rollers a year, believe me.
Do you know what? I think after the first one, it almost turned into an ego thing for me. We're actually worried about what people thought and what they said. And when I sat back and looked at it and we went through the second documentary and the third one, I thought, do you know what? I don't remember doing any of this stuff. It's almost a flash in the pan where you react to a certain thing, like you said before, and people are going to judge you on it. Now, that's fine, that's okay, because I've still done that this season. We're 8 points clear, and I've still done that this season. I regret it being on TV, but I also know that I'll probably do it again in the future. But I also appreciate the fact that it makes brilliant TV for the people sat at home and they need viewers, and me sat there scribbling a piece on a pad or a piece of paper, you know, going through trainings, doesn't work well. They don't want to see that. They want to listen to me screaming and shouting and swearing and almost sounding like Mike Bassett. I get it. I totally get it. And I think you've got to be very open-minded, you know, doing the job that we're doing with the owners who they are and the camera crews being there. That's going to happen. They're probably at times going to make you look that way. Do you know? I sort of accepted that.
No, and I think it's fine. And I... For my 10p's worth, it's a brilliant series. It's brilliantly done. It's absolutely done for a football supporter to watch it, and you know, it. I think it certainly doesn't make your job easier. I wouldn't say that, but then having the five people that own the club, you're never going to mug them off anyway. So you've nothing to hide. But so that's brilliant. But coming back on now, you've just brought in sort of Tom Walker as well. You're now full time. Realistically, you've got to look at it now, Anthony, and go, well, it's ours now to win and get it into the national, isn't it?
Well, we was 9 points clear a couple of weeks ago. We're 8 points clear now. We're 16 games to go. Every time we win a game, it's one less till the end of the season. And it's ours to lose. You're absolutely spot on. I know. I look at it every single day. It's ours to lose. And if we throw... I mean, it could be 5 points in all fairness. And if they beat us on Saturday, because we play them on Saturday, Harrogate, it could be down to 2 points in the space of 5 or 6 days. That's why I keep saying how quick it can happen. However, it's in our hands. We win our games. Yeah. We win the league. So we know that the pressure is massively on us. But that's no different since the owners came in. It's no different since me and Bernard came through the door. Every single game we played this season, David, and I'm not exaggerating, every single game, I listened to the interviews from the opposition manager, and they say it's the best we've played. It's the best we've played. So we're up against that every single week. Sides raise the game, and I'm not being—I don't mean that being arrogant. I totally understand it.
No, I know. I had it when I was at AFC Wimbledon. I had exactly the same thing for three seasons, where every game, you know, for a fact, when the team sheet, when the fixtures come out, everyone in the league goes, "When do we play Wimbledon?" And that's absolutely something you have to live with. But then that's part of the deal. I think, and I'm sure you're the same. You show that. That's part of the deal. That's part of what you want. That you've got that test. Absolutely,
you've got to embrace it, because you know you're doing something right when you're there to be shot at. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, last one for me, and I know I've hogged this, but it's been interesting. Last one for me. When's your contract up?
Next season. At the end of next season, we signed a 2-year deal last March.
Yes.
And I mean, it was well documented about the stuff with me and Bernard having to leave work and you know, discussing finances. But you know, I've got three children at home. Bernard's got two kids. You know, ultimately, the job's now putting food on the table and paying bills.
Yeah.
So it had to be right for me to make that leap. It was a dream come true. But it's not like I'm a 21-year-old single bloke. You know, it had to be right. So they give us a 2-year contract to the end of next season. And hopefully, you know, we can win promotion this year and have a good go at the National League. But that'll be something brand new to us again. You know, we've had two good seasons at every level that we've ever been at, from the bottom of non-league up to where we are now. And next season, if we win promotion, it'll be another new experience for us.
Well, listen, it's pretty, the last one for me, just a little point, is that I had in my contract, any promotion guaranteed me an extra year. So you might want to think about that in your small print next time, mate.
Love that. That's brilliant.
You have
to be me
agent
as well.
I can't spell agent. It's been lovely to speak to you and wish you well. And bottom of my heart, the show has been great on the TV. thanks, Tim, for letting me hog it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you asked all the questions anyway, Dave. You know, it would have been nice to speak to him, but I'll have to arrange another time and bring him back on the show in a few weeks' time. When, you know, maybe when the league's a little bit more precise and maybe your lads have done their job. But it has been great listening to you anyway, Anthony, and wish you well the weekend for the rest of the season.
Brilliant, fellas. Appreciate it. Thanks very much.
No, good luck, mate.
Well, Dave, I enjoyed that, and I think you did as well. And it's nice to hear someone, a manager that's probably under more pressure than most, as you would understand, but he seems to be enjoying it still.
Well, you have to embrace it. That's the point I was sort of saying to him at the end. And the reason I hogged the interview is, you know, I know loads of managers, as you know, so do you. We've been doing this show a long time, and through my own career, sort of meeting them, and I still speak to them. I've never been in any of their dressing rooms, so I don't know how they react or what they do. I don't know Anthony Johnson or Bernard Morley, but I've been in their dressing room, so I was really keen to sort of progress that. And they'll be the same, you know. They'll know lots of managers, but we don't often get to go in someone else's dressing room. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, even me in our own dressing room, it's one thing that I've always made sure that I stay out of. Yeah, I might go in after the game, but once everybody's had the tea thrown at them and everything else thrown at them, once they've come back out to cool down or warm down or whatever they're doing, but it's like one of those forbidden places, isn't it?
Well, it is, and it has to be that way. It has to be, like, you can't just stroll in, you know, willy-nilly. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. What happens in the dressing room stays in the dressing room. That's why I was asking Sir Anthony about how he felt about the cameras being in there, because I'm not sure it's a natural thing, and he said as much as that, you know, he understands that, because you really... It's a private place. That's what makes the show brilliant for me, is that you get to know these characters and how they react to a degree, you know. And I understand that the TV want the rollickings as opposed to the nice stuff, you know. But you get to read people and you get to see other people work in the dressing room. And as a manager, you don't get to do that often. But I think, you know, there's similarities between his job and the one I had, albeit that they're now at a higher level than when I managed sort of Wimbledon. But, you know, the biggest game of the season, yep, you know. And just to hear other people's sort of how they feel about it and being the big club and then going to full time. And, you know, to be fair to him, he can put a sentence together. He can, you know, he's obviously no stranger to doing radio, TV, but
certainly media savvy. Yeah.
I know, but listen, you know what I like about him? Unlike if you get the Premier League guys in, he answered the questions.
Yeah, and
there was an honesty about the interview, and you don't often get that. And as I'm sitting here, at Salford City, the TV show, what we need now is someone to do Man City. and do the same thing at Man City, Man United, a Premier League club, and get the access at these, and see how the big guys go, you know.
I remember a documentary, I can't remember how far back it was, when Dave Bassett did one when he was at Sheffield United. I remember that.
Yes.
Behind, you know, in the dressing rooms and all that sort of thing, and sort of exposed a lot of things. I grew up in dressing rooms at a much lower level, and I'd seen various bits and pieces like that. The words that I was told, I was able to listen to, but I was never allowed to repeat when I got outside, yeah.
Absolutely. And last one for me. I don't want to give them the kiss of death, but you would back them to go up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they
know how to do it.
Yeah, and they signed Nick Horton today, a 2.5-year deal from Fleetwood Town. So, that, you know, Div 1, stepping out of the Football League to join them. He's been on loan with them before, and he's been on loan with Chorley in their division this season. So, yeah, they've nicked a midfielder from one of their promotion-chasing rivals and brought him into their team as well. So, yeah, I mean, if anyone's going places, they've certainly got all the assets, haven't they?
Yeah, they do. And it's never as easy as just having big dough and big money and big crowd. You know, you have to carry it out, and you have to then move again and go again. And I think they've been very good at that. And you would back him to go again. And why not? You know, it's a magnificent story, really.
So stories about club takeovers are fairly common in football, but it is rare that the club at step five are able to announce new owners, wiping the debts and a new blueprint for success. Worksop Town, the world's fourth oldest football club, currently play in step five, the Northern Counties East League Premier Division. This week, they did just that. Former chairman Jason Clark has sold his shares, with Paul Williams, Paul Tompkins and Niall Robertson taking ownership of the club. Shaw has written off a £550,000 debt for the club, leaving it debt-free. Williams will become managing director, Tompkins chairman and Robertson director of operations. And joining us to explain more is media officer Jake Brown. It's great to be able to report a club being debt free. So why Worksop Town, do you think, for this investment by these guys?
Well, they fell in love with the project, really. They saw what could be. They're very visionary and they saw what a project it could be over the next 7 to 10 years. And they really fell in love with the idea, really, and luckily the outgoing chairman was, or the owner, should I say, Jason Clark, was very receptive to our plans, and he was willing to, he always said that he was willing to give the club to somebody who would take it on a step further, and he had the trust in them to do so, and he believed in our vision, and luckily he was able to give it to us, sell it to us, and basically said, I'll wipe the debt free and give you a good blank cheque to work with. So it was great news for us.
Yeah, and you were part of the you know, you really brought these guys to the table, really, I guess. Did you? You were part of the introduction to the club.
Yeah. Pretty much, I was there first, and I realised that it needed somebody like Paul Williams, who's now the managing director and owner, with his expertise, and we kind of carried the club through the last summer. Which was a pretty hectic period. It was actually close to folding at that time, if I'm honest. It had no direction at all. And we took it on. And then luckily, our landlord actually took two stands away. We actually part-owned the ground with a team called Andrews Paramore at the moment. And he took two stands away, which added to the bleakness, as I'm sure you'll agree. And we got introduced to a guy called Paul Tompkins. And he basically said, you know, this is great, I'm a local man, let me build you a stand, let me gift it you, which he did, which was an unbelievable gesture. And then he fell more and more in love, he realised what could happen, and he started coming to games, and then got more involved with the managerial side of things, and the board, like makeshift board of directors at the time, but not actually official. And yeah, he brought into the project, and then Niall came along with Paul, who was his business partner. And the dream was alive from there, really. And then, as I say, me and Paul Williams have been around the club for the last 6 or 7 months, kind of reviewing the business and making sure we know everything about it. And then we was in a good position to make everything official.
I'm already thinking that I need to send you an option agreement for the film rights for this one.
Yeah, it could make a good one, that's the point.
Obviously, you've been there for a number of months now, but what do these guys know about non-league football and know about the club?
What do they know? Paul Tompkins is a local man. He's been seeing the games for a while. Paul Williams, his background is in hospitality, really. So he more or less fell in love with the club for what it could be off the pitch. I brought the football expertise really to them guys and advised a lot. And then we've got a lot of help from former players. Former players have come back on board, giving a lot of advice. Like say Kenny Clark, Chris Waddle's had a chat. Quite a few big names of advisors. And we've also brought in Keith Eilert, who has been around the club since the 1970s. Former director of football at the club and the club secretary. He's pretty much done every voluntary position type thing that there is at the club going, actually. And he's not as non-league and football. He's second to none, so he helps us a lot. We brought in a lot of people around us who are UEFA B, UEFA A level coaches, whose expertise we can really lean on. We've got a new head of football development in Ian Newton, who's a UEFA B coach, who headed our junior section.
And he's been brought on board to head that section and lead the pathway from under sevens up to the first team, really. So it's a great, exciting thing for the future that we've got that pathway, because the club was pretty broken when me and Paul came in. The junior section weren't aligned with the club. The under-19s and the ladies weren't talking. And it was all a bit mishmash. But we brought everybody together and we've made it as one now.
Yeah, I mentioned the blueprint. Yeah, people can see, find that on your club website and that sort of thing. But, I mean, just your explanation there. We hear about people coming in and you're buying a club or taking over a club. And normally it's just a... It's just a thing like they've seen on a shelf where it looks like there's a proper plan gone in place here, and you know it looks like there's a.
Well, if we put some serious man hours into a good plan for the next 7 to 10 years.
Yeah, rather than come in and then sit down and think, oh well, where do we go now? It sounds like everything's in place. Dave, have you got a question?
Yeah, you know, I'm more interested, obviously, in the football side of it. So you know, you sort of sit in 10th, you know. One, are playoffs out of reach? Two, is there an injection of cash into the budget to take the first team forward as yet?
We've not done as well as we wanted to this year. Ryan was appointed in May, which was pretty late, to be honest, so he's pretty behind. But he's always had an healthy budget. We don't believe in cutting budgets or cutting budgets halfway through the season. We want people, you know, we want to be sustainable, and we want players to think, right, I'm going to get paid all year round if I'm coming. I'm not going to, halfway through the season, going to be cutting my money and halfway. We don't want that. That's not a way forward for anybody, really, in any business. But we've always had a healthy budget and we've maintained that. Our plan is 18 months to 2 years target in each division, ideally. We need to get back into that National North Conference level, where we got demoted from about 3 or 4 years ago now due to financial reasons. We need to get it back up there. Our fan base is incredible. You know, we're getting 400 to 500 a game.
Really?
Which is terrific for the Step 5.
Unbelievable.
And, you know, yeah, it's incredible. The expectation on us is obviously success straight away, as you'll get, because we shouldn't be where we are at the minute, but we're fighting our way back up, and it won't happen overnight. And 18 months to 2 years each division, I think, hopefully with our sustainability and business plan in force, hopefully we can do that.
So basically a promotion every two seasons, Jake, yeah?
We'd like to think so, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Again, it's a 10-year thing. If it doesn't happen, then it's a long-term thing.
That's within the realms of possibility and realisation. I'm putting your manager under big pressure now, but I do think that's a reasonable. if the budget's right for each level that you're at to let you compete in that level, then I think that's a reasonable ask.
Clubs in our division are spending ridiculous money. They really are chucking money at it to get through to Step 5, Evo, Step 1. We can't compete with that kind of money. We really can't. So, you know, we're looking to, you know, sustainability of youth and bringing the youth up and an healthy budget, but we're not going to go ridiculous. We're not going to break the bank, because we've seen that happen before with so many clubs. And you look at Ilkeston.
But I would say as well, Jake, that the situation that the club's in now is, it's a full turnaround, you know. There must be people walking around works up just with smiles on their face, that debt free, new people going in the club, new start. You know, it's absolutely going in the right direction. So I would say it must be a happy camp.
With such a massive fan base, you'll always get question marks. People want to know, you know, it's such good news, but people will still want to think, right, well, what's your intention? Are you going to get your money back? You know, there's always question marks in that. People are always questionable because we've had such a dodgy past, shall we say. You know, people coming in and then pulling the money, and when it's not worked, and then going AWOL and things, and sometimes it doesn't work. So people are, you know, we have to gain that trust, but we will do.
Well, it's certainly, as I said before, it's nice to hear that it's already so structured and you've already got those plans in place. And last week we spoke to Natalie Atkinson, who's the CEO from Curzon Ashton that's moving over to Southport. We said, you know, the changes that she's been able to bring about at that club by being there full time. Is there going to be investment off the field as well for, you know, people like yourself to be working full time to? Because
that's right.
The football club to survive is okay. Because the football club is more about off the field as well, isn't it? To keep it sustainable.
It is, yeah, it is, and that's what the managing director and the chairman have really tried to make clear with the vision statement on the website that we need an off the field structure first to make sure we're sustainable, and then that on the field will then be a byproduct of that. And sometimes it takes having professional people full time, if we can afford to do that. And luckily, we've got myself and Niall and Paul who are there day to day. The chairman will step in when required. And we're working on a solid business plan to try and make the club viable off the field.
Well, it certainly sounds like you've got a great team around you, and you're heading in the right direction. We're following closely and wish you well with the whole project.
Thanks very much, Tim.
Dave, I mean, I said we spoke to Natalie last week, and we also mentioned about Truro, you know, up for sale, where they're looking for a new investor, where they've pulled them to that 5-year plan. There are certain things in football that seem to be working, certainly at the lower levels. You know, we're beginning to hear various things going wrong at the top of the game, but I think at the lower level, you know, there's some sensible people involved now, aren't there?
There absolutely is, and I don't think it's reported enough. I think we do our best to balance the books on the show, you know. But I do think there's some great stuff happening, and it, you know, listen, the dark side, the top level, they can get on with what they do. But it all, I think non-league, all in all, is in a good place, and it seems to be gaining strength year by year. You know, And stories like this just help, you know. You're always amazed. I'm always amazed by people's love of football, their love of their community, and the hours that not everyone, because, you know, not everyone could do it, but the hours and weeks and years that people put into their local football club, non-league club, for nothing, you know, for absolutely nothing, warms the cockles of your heart, as my late mother used to say in Belfast. God bless her, you know. So, yes, to start the show with such tragic news of Cyril and Kev, and to end it on stories like this is, you know, it's nice just to leave it with a smile, you know.
Yeah, and that's, you know, again, all the time we've got. And I will mention that fundraising site for Kevin McGoldrick, former physio at Slough Town. If you go to www.justgiving.com and just search for Super Kev, and you'll find the site that Neil Baker, the current joint manager at Slough Town, joint managers everywhere at the moment, he's set up.
Oh, there's another one. Yes, you know, I never even thought of that. Yeah, John and Neil have done great at Slough, you know. Yeah,
maybe that's where you went wrong, Dave.
I can just about share it with me, never mind share it with someone else, you know. But yeah, and the other one that has to be said is John Dreyer has gone in as WIR manager. Craig Edwards left to go to Cheshunt, you know, which we covered last week. And Tumble, who we were only talking about a couple of weeks ago.
It was number two at Southport, wasn't he?
And there you go. He's got the WIR job, and hopefully we'll get him on in the next couple of weeks, because I ain't spoke to him for, I don't know how many years, a long time. But great appointment on their part. They've done their homework on their. I know Craig didn't work out and left quite quickly, but to get Craig was a real good deal, and to replace him, which must have going to be an awful hard job, to get Tumble is decent, believe me.
Well, we'll try and get John on in the coming week. So, well, don't forget, you can find us throughout the season on Audio Boom, also on iTunes, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio. And if you want to put the podcast on your own website, check out www.nonleaguefootballshow.com, where you can grab an embeddable player for free. Thank you and goodbye.
Jibber Jabber Production. JIBBA JABBA